the nations have gone back into idolatry, and once again they become wicked and corrupt, so God gives them up, and who does he go with? Genesis 12? The call of Abraham? Thank you. I think we're a little rusty this morning. The call of Abraham, the selection of Israel. What did he do with the rest of the nations? He gave them up, right? And Romans 1 lists what they did. They went off into horrible sins. And then the children of Israel, were they a wonderful, hot, holy, godly nation? No, they were filled with bloodshed, and they were filled with fornication and idolatry and ungodliness. So then Jesus comes, and Jesus begins to teach the gospel. Now, did it make a difference in Israel? Not really, because at the time Pilate asked, you want Jesus or you want this murderer, what did they say? After all the miracles, after all his work and all of his effort, what happened in the end?
Crucified.
The whole nation turned against him. He was crucified. Then Paul begins to go into all the world and preach the gospel. But everywhere they go, what do they face? Persecutions, wickedness, ungodliness, corruption. What would make things any better today? Why would we think that just because the gospel is here, that somehow man's essential nature is going to change? We see man's essential nature with Cain and his offspring. We see it again at the flood. We see it again at the call of Abraham. We see it again and again through the judges, through the kings. We see it with the crucifixion of Jesus. Now we've got the gospel. Is everything going to change?
No.
No. Carl?
And even when among the Lord's 12, one of them was a devil.
That's true. One of them betrayed him. One of them. And I've always believed that God or Jesus chose Judas to help us understand that are there some people you can't help? No matter how good you are, no matter how much you love them, no matter how much time you put into them, there are some people. I mean, could Jesus have done any more for Judas? In his inner circle, performing miracles, seeing prophecy fulfilled, hearing the gospel again and again and again, but it didn't help him. Because he allowed a sin to take captive. And that's what makes for perilous times, is when men go lower and lower into sin, and once you reach a certain level, then other people are going to be harmed. Let's see, Charles?
Yeah, also on the same line, they all forsook him also too.
Oh yeah, yeah. They all forsook him. But I think they got it together after that.
Well, yeah, afterwards, yeah.
But yeah, essentially what we're talking about is man's essential nature without the gospel. You remember Peter in 2 Peter 1, he says, "Blessed be the God and Father," and then he goes on to say, "The grace and peace to you. God has given us all things that pertain to life and godliness. He's given us precious and exceedingly great promises, so that through these we can become partakers of the divine nature and escape the corruption that is in the world by lust." Well, Jesus said, how many are going to do that in Matthew chapter 7? Many are going to follow the wide, broad path that leads to destruction. How many are going to follow the narrow path?
Few.
Just a few. And those people on the wide path, are they lovely, wonderful people? No, not for the most part. All right, Carl, you had your hand up earlier? Oh, it's all done? Okay. All right. I love it when one guy gives the answer for another comment. Okay, so there's going to be false teachers among us, is another prophecy that Peter gives, that people are going to twist the scriptures to their own destruction. And during the Middle Ages, these people, these Catholics, these supposedly the Lord's Church, what were they doing to anyone who disagreed with them? They were torturing them and they were murdering them. Now, what kind of a advertisement of the gospel is that? So perilous times are going to come. And the word for know is the broadest word in the Greek language. It means from all the way from coming to know to having an expert knowledge of. But the basic idea behind the term is an intelligent comprehension of something. So if the teacher gets up after teaching the students about basic math and she says, "Do you now know math?" What will they say? Well, yeah, we know 2 plus 2 is 4. We know 4 plus 4 is 8. So we have an intelligent comprehension of that. Now we get to algebra. Now we start over again. And we have to learn it first. And then we have an intelligent comprehension. And then we move on from there. That's what this word is carrying. So Timothy already seen perilous times since he's been with Paul, since the second missionary journey? Has he seen persecutions and tribulations? Has he seen Paul beaten and mistreated and betrayed? So in perilous times, he's already come to know this, but it's going to be added on. Plus all the future evangelists. I mean, is it a shock when you find out that becoming a Christian is going to lead to persecutions and tribulations and trials and troubles? Is that what we expected when we signed on for this?
No.
Well, for the most part, we thought God was going to take care of us. But we have come to know that people are going to persecute. And Jesus said, if they persecuted me, they'll persecute you. You're not above me. George?
Many people seem to think that this verse would say that these times are going to come in the future somewhere, which they really are, as you already said, but they are already there, as you already said, and the scriptures tell us in other places that the last days were already in progress, and still are.
Yeah, no, and that's right, and I was just quickly looking for the Greek word for come, and it means to place in or among, or to be upon, to impend, to threaten, or close at hand. Now, did Paul say the iniquity of lawlessness is already at work? So this is already in the process. And yeah, you're right, George. It's in the, you know, let me jump ahead a little bit. What does the word last days mean? Excuse me. When did the last days begin? Let's start with that.
The gospel.
Christian dispensation.
Okay, when Peter got up and preached that first sermon, he said, this is the fulfillment of the prophecy of Joel. It shall come to pass in the
last days.
So when did the last days begin? When Peter preached that sermon. When are they going to end? Well, 1 Corinthians 15:24, then comes the end, when he will deliver the kingdom back to God. So we have in the beginning, and then we have in the end. So the first days would have been the patriarchal dispensation. The second or middle days would have been the Mosaic dispensation. And today we are in the last days, which are what?
Christian
dispensation. Now, many people today, they tell us we're still waiting for the last days to begin, right? Yep. And they've got this notion that somehow there's going to be a special period. And of course, they characterize it with the millennium or the thousand-year reign. And of course, Scripture does not back that up at all. The fact of the case is, if you look at, how about Hebrews 1:2? God, in various times, has spoke to the fathers in different ways and in different matters, but now in the last days, he speaks to us in his Son. Now, has he not spoken yet? Are we waiting for that to happen? Is the last day still coming? No, he's already speaking to us. In Isaiah 2:2, it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains. Does that happen?
Yeah,
this is the church. In the last days, you will understand it perfectly, Jeremiah 23:20 says. So the last days began with the Apostle Peter's first sermon. And from that sermon, perilous times came. Peter and John and the rest of the apostles are preaching in Jerusalem. What are the Sanhedrin doing? Are they just sitting back and saying, oh, isn't this wonderful?
No.
Well, perilous times came. When Herod killed James, was that a fairly perilous time? And going to kill Peter. And Paul and Barnabas and Paul and Silas constantly having issues. And remember what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 4? I believe that the apostles are all men doomed to die. We are persecuted. We are mistreated. We are the off-scouring of all things. So this isn't something that is going to come later. It's just something that's going to be. It's just something. And you know something? We have lived through an age. I mean, the last 50 or 60 years or even more, I've heard men praying all the time. We thank you that we can worship you without fear. of persecution. That became a cliche that I've been hearing ever since I became a member of the church. Is it looking like that may not continue?
Yes.
Are you starting to see signs?
Yes.
I'm watching the left and the right. Are they all becoming more militant? Because you look at the political spectrum. Because, brethren, let's face it. When this reaches a level where they're fighting with each other over political things, and we take a stand with the right or the left on something because it's in the scriptures, what's going to happen? They're going to turn on us just like they've turned on. And it's getting to the point where it's violent. It's getting to the point where it's not just anger anymore. It's not just, I mean, we watch the dialogue turn from debating to hatred and disgust of one another in the last, what, maybe 15 or 20 years? Now we've reached a point of violence where there's no toleration. And I can tell you from past history and the nature of man that that's not going to end well for us. Carl?
The scripture teaches that a house divided against itself can't stand.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've become increasingly worried about that. So anyway, as I've said so many times the last few years, this is not the time to be a lukewarm Christian because things can change overnight. And we could all die. North Korea is threatening something. They may never do it, but if they do, are we on their list? Colorado on their list? Yeah, Denver's a strategic area. We could all wake up dead. Whatever that means. George?
Well, there have been people in this country, actually quoted, being involved in various protests. It says that violence is required.
Right. Yeah, and as I said, because we aren't with the right, but do we stand with them on abortion? Do we stand with them on homosexual rights? And can we compromise that? So if it gets to the point where these things become a flashpoint, even though we're trying to be out of this, I don't like to be involved in politics at all. I don't think it's a wise thing for Christians, because if you're trying to convert somebody on the opposite side of your political views, what's going to happen? You're going to push them away. That's why very seldom do I ever try to preach on or teach even in a Bible class and use those illustrations. Did I see a hand, Carl?
Well, the latest is that a lot of the denominations are siding with the homosexuality.
Right.
All types of
Yeah, we're being left higher, further and further out on the limb, aren't we? All by ourselves.
Women preachers and Southern Baptists. You
know. No, we're way out of the mainstream. Yeah. We used to be the mainstream not too long ago, but now we're out of it. And we'll see what happens. Did I see another hand? Oh, honey.
I was in San Anderson, one of the largest. It's called Central Christian Church, and they have a homosexual preacher.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've had to talk to some of the friends that I have.
Right.
And what they say is, well, you know, God has forgiven everyone, and it's through his grace and mercy. That's
right.
What they say.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Korah. Korah lives on. He's alive and well in our culture today. Did you see yesterday that California has sent a petition to legalize prostitution to the Ninth Circuit Court, and they've agreed to hear it? So that's where we're at. That's why I saw it on Fox News a couple days ago. That they want to get rid of sexual activity. Paying for sexual activity should not be a crime. If we go there, we're just one step closer to where Israel was during the time of Manasseh. Carl?
Even the Pope is leaving that way.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. That's kind of interesting. You would have thought that they would, because they were one of the few churches that still stood on some of those things. And they're starting to cave in too. So the world's going to become more perilous than it has been. All right, so the word perilous means hard to bear, sore, grievous. And then here's some examples. The severity of the wind. Something that's difficult to do. Harsh, severe, stern, strict, a more bitter enemy. Most difficult to deal with. Most dangerous and troublesome. Ill-tempered, angry, testy, of savage animals. Is that pretty perilous? I mean, if you read the way the Greeks use this word, not a good word. And again, for the Christian, the gospel's come in, it's going to be preached to all the world, we're going to usher in a time of peace, we're going to beat our plows into, or excuse me, our swords into plowshares, and everything's going to be wonderful. But what about those people who aren't converted? They're not going to go there. So perilous times are going to come. I don't know if you've ever read Fox's Book of Martyrs, but it's just an eye-opener of what was going on during the Middle Ages, the way that people were mistreated. The tortures that they devised were just, I mean, you'd think if you're going to kill somebody, you'd make it merciful, but they didn't. They were just like the Romans. They sewed people into animal skins and lit them up and just all kinds of kinds of terrible things. All right, so we're going back to Romans 1. Romans 1, they didn't like to have God in their knowledge. God gave them over to a debased mind, being filled with unrighteous sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud. And if you watch the television programming at night now, are we seeing a lot more of this than we were 20 or 30 years ago? 20 or 30 years ago, it was sitcoms, and it was clean, and it was okay. I mean, there were some innuendos, but are they innuendos anymore? That's right out there. I mean, graphic violence, graphic sexual activity. So, again, they didn't want to have God in their knowledge. I've never believed that this is a one-time thing. I think I call this first-generation apostasy. And whenever you get first-generation apostasy, this is what occurs. And so, perilous times. All right. I was going to say let's turn to page 4, but you don't have my notes today. So, all right, so we come to the vocabulary word. As I said a moment ago, there are 16 different vocabulary words here, and we're just going to lightly touch on them. There's no reason to go into a lot of them in great detail, but I am going to give you some examples from the Old Testament to kind of elaborate on what these things are. So, first of all, men are going to be lovers of themselves. Now, do we have to define that? What's a good synopsis of lovers of yourself?
Selfish.
Selfish. Self-centered. We call it narcissism today. What does narcissism mean? Self-centered. Everything's about me. When I see people, it's all about me. I can't even see them at all. That's narcissism. Is that loving oneself? I'm greater than everyone else. Everyone else should bow down to me. Their pain is insignificant. If it helps me, their loss is insignificant. If it helps me, if they die, it's okay as long as it benefits me. That's where narcissism leads you. It's a terrible ailment. I mean, but it really isn't an ailment. What is it? I mean, psychiatrists are talking about this a lot these days. But really, it's just perilous times, and people are lovers of themselves. Carl?
You can see it from the White House to the jailhouse.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Yeah. It's everywhere. Cain thought his own petty needs were more important than Cain's life and God's favor. Esau, when he sold his birthright because he was hungry, was that kind of a self-centered thing to do? Selfish? Saul, when he didn't follow the Lord's will fully, King Saul, and the Jewish leaders who killed Jesus to save their position and their way of life. Is that pretty much cover lover of self? Okay, so lovers of money. We have any of that today? Yeah, it's everywhere. It means those people who desire to be rich. And if you desire to be rich, what did Paul say? You fall into
many foolish and hurtful
temptations, snares, and many foolish and hurtful lusts, which what? Drown men in destruction and perdition. So, how about Balaam selling out God's people by teaching Balak to get beautiful women out there so they'd commit fornication? Is that kind of lover of money? Lover of power? Ananias and Sapphira, what would you call that? Is that a love of money?
Yeah.
How about Judas? Love of money. You see where this goes when people, it creates perilous times. Now, a boaster, we have two different words here, proud and boaster. And most people would say, well, a boaster is just manifesting his pride. And in a sense, that's true. But these are actually two different words. And they have two different basic concepts behind them. Let me read the definition of boaster. The one who makes more of himself than the reality justifies, ascribing to himself either more and better things than he has or even what he does not possess at all, who promises what he cannot perform. And then in the Greek language, it's very often the orator, the philosopher, the poet, the magician, the doctor, the cook, or officer is called boasting. So these are occupations where people can get a false sense of who and what they are. So now Simon the sorcerer, who was called the great power of God, was he boastful? Did he know these things weren't really true? They were all tricks? Yeah, he knew that. And then Peter talks about uttering great swelling words of emptiness. They allure through the lust of the flesh, through lewdness, the ones who have actually escaped from those who live in error. And, you know, that's probably the most disgusting thing that we see is when somebody we've converted, their mother or their brother or somebody they know or a friend leads them back into the mire, leads them back to the vomit. And so did Peter have a little touch of boastfulness when he said, if everyone else forsakes you, I won't? Yeah, he was boasting. Korah boasted that he was just as holy as Moses and that Moses was taking too much on himself. How about Miriam and Aaron? When God turned her leper into a leper and said, if her father had but spit in her face, so I'm going to leave her like this for 7 days. Well, what did she do? What did she and Aaron do?
They were complaining against Moses.
Yeah, we're just as good as Moses. You are, you know, they were just precursor to, or actually they were after Korah, but they, and then we find that Moses was very humble. He was the meekest man in all the whole in the face of the earth. So Job was, I have no mind like him in all the world and or all the earth. And here's Moses, the meekest man on the face of the earth. All right. So that, oh, George.
Since all the women like to complain that Paul didn't know what he's talking about, would they want to say in this verse that since it says men, these things don't apply to women?
Well, they possibly could, but in the Greek language, as in the English language, although we're getting away from it now, men can mean the entire group of people, or it can mean the male, and we have two different words for it. Actually, we don't have two different words for it. They did. They had andros for male, and they had anthropos, anthropology, for mankind. So, but yeah, you're going to find people there. Somehow they're going to get these shackles off. I mean, no matter, they're going to find an argumentation that takes the shackles off. Okay. Proud means somebody who shows himself to be above others, overtopping, conspicuous, above others, preeminent. Now, people who boast, oftentimes, do they know that they're really not what they are boasting?
Yeah.
But how about the proud guy? He can't even see it. He really thinks, I'm the best. And once again, we come back to that word narcissism, which I want us to become familiar with. A lot of people don't know what it means, but it's being thrown around a lot now, and it's become a household word. And so it's a word that we need to kind of understand. And so it actually deals with that. And overweening, which I don't know what that word means. That's a 1700 word, overweening. But it just means a huge estimate of our means or our merits, despising others or treating them with contempt. You remember Scrooge? Would he be this guy? Yeah, he didn't care about anybody in the beginning. How about, was Pharaoh a guy like that? Did Pharaoh think, I can beat God, I can beat his people?
He thought he was a god himself.
Yeah, he did. He thought he was a god himself. Many of the nations that fought against Israel felt scorn and contempt for Israel's claims. Right, then we come to a word that we know, but we don't know. Blasphemy. Generally speaking, when you heard the word, you hear the word blasphemy, what are you thinking? We're speaking against God. But what the translators did, and I don't know why they did it, this word is used a lot in the New Testament. But whenever they came to God, they used the word blasphemy. But whenever they came to man, they used the word, well, no, they used the word railing or reviling or speaking evil. So, but this term does not completely, the word itself does not stop with God. It stops with any time we speak evil of anyone. The word actually means slanderous, reproachful, railing, and abusive. Now, do people do that to God?
Yeah,
they do it to God. How about to their fellow man? They do. Do they do it more to their fellow man than they do to God? See, a lot of us give ourselves a pass. We would never say anything bad about God. But what about our brethren? What about people in the world? What about political people we don't agree with? We ready to blaspheme them? Too often, we are. As James pointed out, no man can tame the tongue. It is unruly evil. With it, we bless our God and Father, and with it, we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. But they are so. You know, as Jesus pointed out, if you're angry with your brother and you call him Raca or thou fool, which is just a derisive term of disgust, you're guilty. So when we call someone a jerk or stupid, and I'm not saying in the context of reasonable discussion, I mean with that terrible note in their voice. Is that blasphemy? Yeah, that's blasphemy. Call someone a moron, call someone an idiot, call someone a jerk, call someone by names. And then, of course, we get into the filthy words, and some people use those words, and it's all blasphemy. And we have a lot of that today? Yeah, and it comes out, road rage. And as we talked about earlier, the political discourse today. When you're talking about people on the other side, what kind of words do we use now? I don't mean we, us, but I mean America. It's blasphemy. It's just railing and reviling. These people are disgusting. They don't have a right to live. We shouldn't listen to them. And so, how about the chief priests and the scribes? What did they do at the trial to Jesus? How about the thief on the cross? You save yourself if you're the Son of God. Just reviling, railing, blasphemy. How about Jezebel with God's prophets? She was a blasphemer. All right. Disobedient to parents. We don't have much of that today, do we?
No.
That's not a problem at all in America. No, it's a serious issue. And again, it's authority. It's an authority issue. Remember back in the 60s, don't trust anybody over 30. And of course, most of our parents by then were over 30. So, and they got included in it. And so we hated authority. They started calling police pigs. They started looking at people in authority as disgusting and foolish, and they lost their respect for authority. And so these people are impersuasible, uncompliant, because they will not submit. And of course, where does that begin? Who's the first authority figure we're not going to submit to? The first ones are
our parents.
Then we move to all rules, regulations that are limiting, confining, or that we don't agree with. And so from that point on, we become unruly at home, unruly at school, unruly as a citizen. And if we are in a church, we become unruly toward God. We're just not going to be bound. If there's something we don't like, no matter, it's in the scriptures. So what? It's the right thing to do. I don't care. Unpersuasible. You can't You know, and I've done this through the years. You try to go to talk to somebody about having their children go to the prom. And you talk about what the person is going to be doing and how these dances, you're holding them and swaying and touching each other and in ways that are totally inappropriate, calling it dancing. And what do they say? I went to the prom when I was a kid. It didn't hurt anything. And can you persuade them? Can't persuade some people regarding alcohol. They're going to drink. You remember in the Old Testament, though, if a man has a stubborn and rebellious son, what are you supposed to do?
Stone him to death.
Take him to the elders and tell the elders, this is our son and we can't do anything with him. Let's see, this son of ours is stubborn, rebellious, he will not obey our voice, he is a glutton and a drunkard. Do those all kind of stand or fall together? Yeah. So in the perilous times that are coming and that are here, do we see that? And you think maybe this might have something to do with why these guys are taking guns to school and killing each other in schools? I mean, do we hear about this 50, 60 years ago when people were in submission to authority? But now you get mad and you're not going to be persuaded and you grab a gun and you just go out and you do things you shouldn't do. Carl, did I see your hand?
I just said this version says unappeasable.
Okay, unappeasable. Yeah, you just can't. There's nothing you can say that will make them submit or treat you with respect. Rob?
And there's a lot of reputable evidence that a lot of these aren't Christians. These are just people that can look at society and see trends and patterns. And most of them say it starts in the home. And if you were to go interview people in prison, for instance, and ask them about their home life, it's beyond that too. It's just our whole society. Employers are having to deal with people that were born after the 50s or whatever. Employees are babies. They don't want to do anything. They feel entitled. It's a mess, and it's getting worse. And for me, when you're in the workplace, you know, you see this, and it's like, and it's just getting away from God, and that's probably back to the parents.
Right.
Kids are being raised in homes that aren't godly. Do what you want, when you want, wherever you want, and to have no consideration for anybody else.
Sure.
Look at what we're producing.
Right, and watching television programs where there's no respect for anything. Yeah.
Feels good to do it.
Right. Yeah, and you know, most people say if you don't get your kids in respect for authority by the time they're 3 or 4 years old, you're playing catch up.
Yeah.
You're never going to do it.
Yeah.
Jeannie used to go to the school and help the teachers, and she'd go out on recess, and she'd say, I can already see the future criminals. I mean, you can see how they're treating other people, even at 5 or 6 years old. And so, Charles?
Yeah, also, too, along the same line with Rob is saying, you know, children are great observers, but they're poor interpreters. In other words, they see this, and they hear this. They hear this from the homes, or they see it on TV or whatever. They interpret a lot of things that are wrong, and that's why they start doing what they're doing. But they are looking. They are watching you as the parent. And how the parent go is how that child go also, too.
Right.
They may not say anything. And it may be whenever they get away from home, but they're going to act exactly
right.
like their parent is at home right now.
Yeah, and of course, you know, those of us who are older, you remember the guy named Spock, and I'm not talking about the guy on Star Trek. You remember
Spock.
Benjamin Spock?
And the other one.
Yeah. The other one, the one who taught you don't want to spank your children because you are hindering their creativity and their ability to make their own decisions. And, of course, what do we have now? We have the fruits of that.
Yes.
And, again, foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child, and the rod of correction drives it from him. But if you're not using that, and parents, if your kids are already talking back to you at 2 or 3 years old, you've had it. And another thing Jeannie used to say, if you can't hardly handle them when they're in their younger time where you can control them with their body, what happens when they're teenagers?
You
know, and then they can beat you up. And sometimes do people slug their parents sometimes and hurt them, kill them? And we read every once in a while. A couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago, the parents said, you can't play your video game tonight. And the next thing that person knew, they were dead because the parent, the kid wasn't going to submit to that. I see another hand. Yeah. Carl?
It was told that Dr. Spock's wife denounced his theory.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Said that he didn't raise the kids, I did.
Yeah.
And what really upsets me nowadays is the casualty with which parents give commands to their children. They'll tell that child to stop running. Then they'll turn their back. The kid's still running.
Right. And they don't do anything. Yeah. Yeah, you can train a kid to do it the first time, or you can train, now mama said don't do that. Now don't do that. You're going to make mama mad. Well, if you keep doing that, mama's going to have to spank you. What are you training your kid? You have to do it the first time? No, just hang on. They'll probably forget if you wait long enough. And that's right. If you don't ever tell your kids to do something unless you're ready to go to the mat with it, unless you're ready to make sure that they're in submission. If you're not going to do that, don't tell them no.
Yes.
Because you're creating problems down the road for their teachers, for their employers, for the police, and for God. And so just let them do what they want to do if you're not going to enforce the rules. And if you're going to have rules, you have to enforce them. And I'm not saying let them do what they want to do, but you'd actually be better off to do that than to tell them to do something and then not follow it up. Rob?
Well,
and grandparents, you have responsibility here too.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Rob, because none of us here are parents. So we're all looking at the, this is academic. No, it's not. Parents, grandparents, talk to your kids. You see your kids doing that, you shouldn't do that. And, of course, they may not listen to you because they're disobedient to parents, too. You just never know. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, with Spock, I mean, the horse is out of the barn. Now, I may be wrong on this. I thought at some point, I'd have to look it up, that he came back and recanted that and said that was a mistake, that he instructed parents to do that.
Well, that may be, but did that...
The horse is out of the barn.
Yeah,
I mean,
who set this up?
Right.
So, you know, you can cry later. I wish I hadn't cried fire in that crowded theater and had all those people die, but you're still responsible?
Right.
Yeah.
Hindsight is always 20/20.
Yeah, exactly. And but we ought to have the wisdom to not have to wait for hindsight. We ought to have foresight. We need to see it before, not after. Are there people in the world who have 20/20 vision both ways? They can see behind, they can see ahead. That's what wisdom is.
Yeah.
If you've got full wisdom, like the proverb says, the righteous sees danger ahead and flees, but the fool passes on and suffers for it, and then he's got the hindsight, but some people have the foresight. A lot of parents have hindsight when they should have had foresight, and they could have if they'd listened to God. God gives us the wisdom to be successful so that we don't have to look back with regret on the things that we do. Because when God says, God is not mocked, a man will reap what he sows, is that true?
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of people don't believe it, but hindsight, it'll be true. Did I see him? Okay. All right. Next vocabulary is unthankful. Unthankful. Now, what does unthankful mean? We're in number 7 out of 18, so we're moving right along. We might get half of them today. Unthankful? Go ahead. Carl, you said?
Ungrateful.
Okay, ungrateful. It can be unthankful, unpleasing, ungracious. So when people take things for granted, somebody does something nice for them, but they should have. So where are the 9? Remember Jesus? One came back to say thank you. Where are the 9? And that's true today. You parents who aren't our grandparents, you're not teaching your kids to say please and thank you. What are you teaching them? Yeah, you're teaching them this is a demand. And we need to teach them it's a request. We need to ask them please because they don't have to do it. And we need to say thank you when they do it. That's a part of life. Go ahead, Carl. Oh, did I see a hand? I thought I saw a hand. Oh, Rob and Connie. Okay, well, Rob first. So unless you want to defer to your mom.
Go ahead. She can go first.
Okay. She might want to say what you're going to say. She probably will since you guys. Go ahead, Connie.
Another word that's very towards millennials is entitled.
Right. Okay, yeah. Sense of entitlement. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. All right, Rob.
Well, somebody might say these things here. You know, is this a really big deal? Well, the scriptures say that the unthankful will not inherit the kingdom of heaven. I mean, you're not going to see heaven if you're an ungrateful, unthankful person.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty serious, you know.
Yeah, that's a first step toward apostasy. You remember in Romans chapter 1, that knowing God, they glorified him not as God, neither gave thanks, but became vain in their reasoning, and their senseless heart was darkened. So even when we pray to God, there needs to be pleases and thank yous, not demanding. Please and thank you. Glorifying him as God. You remember what happened to Nadab and Abihu, and then God said, I will be glorified before all the people, and before all the people I will be treated as holy. And if you don't, this is what's going to happen to you. So unthankful people are dangerous, because if you do something for them, what are you going to get for it?
Nothing.
Nothing. And of course, we're not doing it to get something, but you would think that after treating somebody well and being nice to them, they're not going to turn around and kick you in the face. Well, what about these people? You can't expect anything. Here's what God told Israel. When you come into the land, houses that you didn't build, full of good things, hewn out walls you didn't have to dig, vineyards and olive trees, beware lest you forget God who brought you out of Egypt. Well, the first step in forgetting God is what? Not thanking him. You remember in 1 Timothy chapter 4 that men will teach to abstain from foods, but God has blessed all foods. They are sanctified first by the word of God and prayer. Well, what do we pray for when we eat our food?
Thanksgiving.
We thank God. We ask God to bless the food, and we're appreciative of the food. Now, if we do that every time we eat, which is 3 times a day at least, if we do that, we're going to be keeping God in our consciousness, glorifying him as God. So this is the problem with people who are unthankful. So keep that in mind, because I think as we get older, sometimes we don't say please as much as we should. I'm trying to think if I do. Do I say please, Jeannie, when I'm asking for something anymore? I don't know. She could probably tell you. He doesn't thank me anymore. It takes me for granted. I don't know if she does or not. You can ask her. But some of us, we don't appreciate our spouse. We don't thank them. We don't say please. That's their job. They're here to please me. Well, once again, we're back to this sense of entitlement and this narcissism. Did I see him? Okay. I think the bell has rung, so we didn't quite make it. I think we got to number 7 or number 8. Where is it? There it is right there. Yeah, unthankful is 7, so we still have 12 to go. So it's not so bad, right? Vocabulary, if you throw in a few examples, it's tolerable. All right, we'll end the class here. Pick up next week.